Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Reddy, but my friends call me Spanners, so let's be friends. This is our Australian Grand Prix race review, and the title of today's show is It's Max Out and Away We Go. That's supplied by Elliot Lincoln on Twitter. Welcome to our review. It was a little bit different. I enjoyed the time change in the end. The bags under my eyes on YouTube will give away the fact that I have been to sleep on five separate occasions since FP3, but I'm happy for the Australians. Dedicated fans from across the world get to have normal time race. And also, I'm happy for the Americans that get to crank out a beer and watch a race, I think, on a Saturday night for you guys. And for the Brits, if you chose to wake up early, it's a little bit of a treat. It feels a little bit like you're in the trenches with the other British fans. And interestingly for me, I was tempted to say, let's just watch the replay. It's on at 9 o'clock. What's the harm? But the reason I can't do that, the reason I was desperate to have the live experience is because of the Missed Apex community. So all you guys who interact in the patron chat and on Twitter, to me, that makes it an unmissable experience. So thank you for always hanging out here with me during the races, if you can. And the race was different, but was it good? Let's discuss, because we're an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed with the kind permission of our better halves. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. Now, because we are trying to align ourselves more with how the big boys do it, we are making sure that we are. I don't want to wait a whole day for a race review. So some of the live streams are going to be a little bit closer to the races. We're very used to that from the late races where we have to quickly get the race review in before everyone goes to sleep. So we're recording this at 9:10 o'clock in the UK. So excuse the croaky voices, but somebody who is on a normal time replacing Matt Trumpets, who's tucked up in bed, is Jonathan Simon. Hey, Jono.
I'm very well, Spanners, and I know you said you had bags under your eyes. Well, I have sunburned because I was at the race, which was great, and I didn't expect there to be sun, but I paid the price, unfortunately, and sunscreen is, and being sun smart is always important. And I was afraid that we'd lose the Max Verstappen podcast and we might lose this one, but this one's live. We lost the Verstappen one, not this one, which I'm happy about. So let's get cracking.
I was just interested earlier, pre-show, for you saying to me, oh, well, it was 20 degrees, so I wore a hoodie. Whereas in the UK, 20 degrees and all bets are off. There's not a trouser to be seen. And we're also joined from the UK by Scott Stuffy Tuffy. Hey, Scott.
Morning, everyone. I'm on my 10th cup of coffee as I was up as early as you yesterday and today.
Yeah, me too.
And this weekend was a positive weekend for Lewis Hamilton.
Oh, that's going to be a tough sell. Okay. And rounding off the panel from Denmark, it's international superstar DJ Christian Pedersen. Hey, Christian.
Good morning, everyone.
Oh, that was a gravelly. You're even gravelier than normal.
Really? I think I just toned it down a bit, but I can go, good morning, everyone.
I like it. Let's get on with our race review.
There is a lot of coffee here in the shed. So I think the place to start, really, guys, is Max Verstappen. And, Jono, you were there at trackside. There was quite the reaction to Verstappen's brake failure, which is sort of telling of where we are in Formula One. I don't think it's that everyone hates Max Verstappen, but seeing him out of the race, suddenly everyone goes, hang on a minute, it's on, it's game on.
And you can gauge from crowd reactions what sort of the majority of fans want to see, or at least are excited to see. And that's the beauty of actually attending the races in person. When you watch on TV and you gauge sort of fan behavior through Twitter, you don't get the same results that you do when you're there. So to see the crowd cheer Verstappen as he drove past, to smell that expensive smoke of that brake sort of just going to pieces as well as he drove past us, that was something I won't forget, you know, to see that car just go straight off and DNF. So for him, the crowd loved it, and he's getting the Schumacher and Lewis Hamilton treatment, which was, I think, well overdue for his success, because he is very, very successful. And to finally get it 3 world championships in, I think he's done a good job to last this long.
It's a badge of honour, really. Vettel had that same thing as well. And 2013 at Silverstone, I definitely cheered and then booed when Vettel had, I think, an engine failure. And I think when you're at the ground, that's part of the pantomime. And I don't believe that the Aussies are mean-spirited when they do it. So, you know, being a cricket fan, Jono, you know, the stuff that goes on between Australian and British cricket fans is crazy, but everyone can have a pint afterwards.
Oh, most definitely. And, you know, in terms of crowd reactions today, the round of applause to see a Ferrari go past was, I wouldn't say surprising, but it kind of said there were signs of life for Ferrari fans as well, which was, that to me is, you see, you forget these things sometimes. You get into your own little bubble watching the sport, and then you kind of realize where the majority of fans sort of are with it. So that was very good. And hearing a lot of people in the grandstands overhearing the smack talk about other drivers and teams was interesting too throughout the event.
So I think there's not much more to say on Verstappen's thing. It looked like a pretty clear brake failure. It's much more interesting that he's reached that status now where him going out of a race is cause for celebration. And I definitely don't think that it was, you know, Australia hates Max Verstappen. It's not that. It's just that's the level that he's got to. Go on, Stuffy.
So I just wanted to add, but actually that's, other than Perez binning it in the wall, that is Red Bull's first proper mechanical retirement since the start of 2022. So that's an end of a run. They had a slight gearbox issue in Saudi in qualifying last year, but in the race, Max has had and Red Bull have had an unbelievable run of reliability, which is another reason to why I can see the fans cheering, because they've just given no opportunity for any other team to have a look in at a race win. And today we got that.
Yeah. So mechanically and operationally, they've been just near perfect since the beginning of 2022, you're right. And this is what people don't realise or forget, that in 2022, Leclerc looked like he had a command of the championship briefly, but really, Red Bull was still winning the races where they didn't have an issue. And nobody here dare get into any conspiracy theories that a first reliability issue just happens to come after Verstappen voices that he might leave the team. How dare you all? Anyone thinking that? How dare you? In fact, both drivers that are leaving their teams or potentially leaving their teams had mechanical failures. So we can go straight to a good news story, though, Christian. That Carlos Sainz winning is one of the most popular results that could have happened today.
I just want to put a little note on the Verstappen topic, right? Not only is Red Bull very impressive from a technical point of view, but if you look at this race, which is maybe the first time this year that Red Bull is being challenged by the Reds or the McLarens, as soon as there's a little bit of challenge, we see Perez ending P5. So that says everything about Verstappen, I think. He's just on another level, even compared to his teammate in the same car. And
we're going to fight. So
yeah, getting the pole position as well, it was all Sainz, right? It shows him.
Okay, well,
about Sainz.
No, because you've led us to Perez now, and we can't just, I don't want to do the YouTube thing where we go, and we'll get back to that later, and then we never do. So, yes, Perez started sixth, but on pace, he was third, so a little behind. And I'm, look, I'm going to defend. Oh, okay, let me have my little defense, all right? And then
all right, go for it.
Okay, so yes, he made a mistake that was punished harshly. So he blocked Hülkenberg, I think, in qualifying, got a three-place grid penalty. That's why he was back in sixth. And then he picked up floor damage when he overtook Alonso. So he was steaming through until he got to Alonso, and then suddenly the pace disappeared. And we were all discussing in the chat, like, where's that pace gone? The tyres must have gone. They are reporting that he had picked up damage from passing Alonso. So that's my little bit of a defence. Stuffy, that's my defence.
Come on.
He wasn't steaming through.
He was like a rocket ship.
Closing up to Alonso, who never really had the outright pace of McLaren and Ferrari. Looking at Perez's lap times, and especially the Red Bull, they'd said it leading up to the race. They think Ferrari had really close race pace to them. And Perez, who's quite widely known and regarded to be very good on the tyres, killed his medium tyres very quickly.
That's true, yeah.
And his race and his lap times, was keeping an eye out on what he was setting compared to the leaders. And actually, he wasn't any quicker than them. So he caught up to a very slow Aston Martin, or a slower Aston Martin compared to the McLarens and Ferraris. And then, yeah, obviously, we will get to Alonso, but picked up damage by not even being able to get past an Aston Martin. So yeah, not a great weekend.
I'm going to come back. Okay, I've got more slightly defendy things.
I was just going to say, wasn't he slow anyway before he passed Alonso? Maybe I'm wrong. I have to look at the pace. Remember, I was at the racetrack, so I didn't have all the data.
He did slow significantly, and like he caught up to Alonso a lot, and then Alonso was able to hang on to him. The pace did drop about a second.
Because I was going to say, with no disrespect to Perez, I was going to say, for the people listening to the video version, I was like, put your hands up if you think he was the worst teammate of any car today in comparison to his teammate. Because I definitely think he was very far off the pace in comparison to every other teammate.
Where was Sargent? Sargent was nowhere.
Again, yeah, Sargent too, unfortunately.
He's the best teammate. he's so good of a teammate. He's given his car to his teammate for the weekend.
I
was half expecting Perez to have to pull into the garage. And they're like, yeah, Sergio, you've got to come in. Just hop out real quick. Well, we, just got a bit of a... And then Max jumps in and still wins.
They used to do that in the 50s or the 60s, yeah. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, they used to do the car swaps, not anymore.
Yeah, you could give it up because I think it was all about the driver. So yeah, interesting topics of car swaps coming up. I've got one last defense with Perez then, which is, had this happened at a race where Red Bull was out and out more dominant, he would have had that opportunity, even if he was, you know, half a step off qualifying and race pace from Verstappen, he would have had then that opportunity in the previous races to go, okay, I'll cruise to victory and I'll show that I can sweep up. Didn't he finish second in the last two races? So if it had been those two races, he'd have won.
But Spanish, if you're constantly 3-4 tenths off your teammate, even in the good races, it gotta creep into you. Look at Hamilton right now. When he's getting out of the car after qualifying, he's like, I don't like this feeling. It's getting to me. And we are three races in. This is like the third season of Perez being 3-4 tenths behind his teammate.
I'm just saying, if this had happened in the first two rounds and Perez had won, would that have been proof that it's just the car and that, you know, that they all win anyway, even without Verstappen? But now, because it was a race where they didn't have the setup right, now it's proof that it's all Verstappen.
But do you think the Red Bull would have won this race if he didn't get a penalty and the floor wasn't broken?
Starting from third, then obviously he's got more of an opportunity to push. But yeah, I've been beaten down enough, even as a Perez fan, to not be able to absolutely look you square in the eye and say he would have won this from third and without floor damage. No, I can't say that. All right. Should we go to signs now? Can we go to the happier things? Can we go to happy times? Can we leave me alone? Right. Is anybody here a signs supporter in general? Because I haven't been, so I can't sit here and like claim bubbly rights. All right. Christian.
I've been rooting him since forever on this podcast. And it's mainly because I think he's just got the racing in his DNA and he's always making the right decisions from his own point of view. He makes the decisions himself.
Yes.
And you can just tell there's something in his bone, which of course comes from his father. And there's something about the Sainz family there. It's the same with the Magnussen family, actually. There's just something special about them. And I think he showed himself today being basically putting Ferrari in a maybe a not so good spot in regards to the decisions. He's leaving him on stage in the spotlight saying, so what's up now?
Okay, so one of the panelists used their nationality's driver, their countryman, as the example. Everyone drink when they do that. Yes, slightly awkward for Ferrari when you look at who won today. But the point I think I was going to make was I'm actually surprised that it panned out. So all throughout that race, I was looking for the swap. And they've definitely done this before with Leclerc and Sainz. I was looking for, there's a pit stop. We had to pit Leclerc first because he was under pressure from Norris. And we didn't even know there was a 6-second undercut. So I was waiting, Scott, for some inventing to happen, and it didn't.
That's true. And I probably expect that a bit later on in the season. But what's to say Carlos Sainz has any obligation? He has no obligation whatsoever with no contract and no seat at Ferrari by the end of the year to adhere to that. He's done it when his seat was secure. Most recently, I remember at Silverstone when they wanted to swap Leclerc and Sainz. So he's done it when he's been in contract, let alone when he's going to be without a seat and he's been pushed to the side. And I think I'm all here for that year. This year, we're going to see of Sainz, I think. We're going to see an aggressive Sainz, someone who's got a point to prove. And I think he's really progressed in the years that he's been at Ferrari. He got off to a slow start, had a few crashes, I think, being part of that, being in the red overalls, kind of the pressure got to him a bit. But then he's slowly become more confident and he's been performing as well as Leclerc. I think Leclerc, don't get me wrong, is great. He gets all the plaudits. But Sainz, even at McLaren, kind of wasn't treated as well as Lando. Everywhere he's been.
And Toro Rosso, the same. Yeah.
Match, he's never really been given the respect that he deserves. And I think any top team, I mean, if he's not in F1, it's a travesty next year. And I think he'll be wasted in a lower team in Sauber/Audi.
Mercedes.
He's been rumoured at for a while. Well, yeah, Mercedes. I mean, he needs to be in a top team, but then you look at it, where is that seat for him, unfortunately? But yeah, he's really improved, and today was a great drive by him, especially after just having his appendix taken out 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, and I couldn't imagine racing at the G-forces they do with, I think he had a full, what do you call those, stitches? Or he had the thing that nurses put on you after you have surgery, or the doctors put on you. He had the full thing on his stomach. So, I mean, good on him for bearing through that. Next year, where's he going to go? Well, Red Bull. What if Verstappen heads over to Mercedes? And what if that all occurs? So, you know, that's some speculation to look onto there for Carlos Sainz. But again, you know, I think, Scott, he was even impressive his first year at Ferrari. He outscored Charles Leclerc. Yes, I had the argument that Charles Leclerc was a better driver, but the points made it look like Sainz was. We won't go into that. But yeah, again, he is Ferrari's in a difficult position. I wouldn't even bother in future to, like, I wouldn't even bother to have him move aside. I wouldn't even bother asking the question, because if I'm Carlos Sainz, yeah, exactly. What incentive do you have to lose, Christian?
Just a short note on the appendix stuff from Sainz. He was being told by Alex Albon, who's apparently had his appendix removed.
Yeah. How could we forget?
That you would feel differently inside your body, like in the intestines.
Yeah, and, it's missing.
He confirmed that by saying you could basically feel the G-force more prevalent inside your core, and you could feel maybe more stuff moving around.
Maybe that's helped him.
Strange. It didn't hurt, but it was maybe it helped. That new sensation of feeling the car. I think every time you get a little bit shook up or get a new realization, you learn something. I'm not saying he won the race because of the appendix, but I'm just saying everyone should get their appendix removed.
You're not saying that. The clerk on his way to the hospital now. Just take it out.
There's 2 weeks to Japan, so if you want to get your appendix out, go tonight at the Royal Melbourne Hospital or something and go get it done.
I do have to say, though, like on Ferrari, and we have bashed them quite a lot over the previous years.
I'm going to have to interrupt you there because I haven't. And EJ's saying Spanner's slowly, sneakily changing to being a Ferrari fan. I have been a Ferrari fan for a long, long time. We don't need to get into how long, but
we've made fun of this strategy.
Cab here. It's...
You're right,
Scott.
With
the Hamilton logo and the horse, right?
Scott, I think we have hammered them fairly when they've required hammering.
And rightly so. But today, I think credit where it's due. They made the right decisions in regards to their strategy. And yes, maybe there's a little bit of a surprise that they didn't ask Leclerc to swap with Sainz, because Leclerc actually would be leading the world championship now.
That was interesting.
They swapped positions. So, but on the contrary, if Sainz was fit to race last week at Saudi Arabia, he also could be leading the world championship right now. Yeah. So Ferrari is in a good position. And I think today all round was a great performance for the team.
All right. I don't want to get carried away because, you know, Red Bull may be on a street track. They might not have the exact same advantage on a weekend where they admit they just couldn't get the setup right. So really, we'll, logic says they'll revert to the mean, you know, hit the ground running in Japan and then China. Is it Japan, then China? Yeah, and that they'll be, you know, back to how dominant they were. So we can't get carried away. But getting carried away and assuming that now Ferrari have a title push on their hands, that is going to get awkward in the future. And they might have to make their decisions and favour someone. But it's not unheard of for an outgoing driver who knows they're on the way out to then go and win the championship. So I think Damon Hill knew, didn't he, that he wasn't going to be staying at Williams. And I don't think Leclerc... did Alonso know he was leaving Renault?
Alonso 2006. Yeah, he signed that McLaren deal in December 2005. So, yeah, didn't have much competition as his teammate. But anyway, that's a different topic.
I think things are a little bit different at Ferrari now than they were just half a year ago. And I think it's the Fred Vasseur effect. If we look at Ferrari from a 24 perspective, their strategy has been kind of good. No mess ups. And if we just completely forget the past, they are definitely approved for 2024 season at this point. So it's the new Ferrari team we're looking at. And I don't think you would, from Fred Vasseur, I'm not Fred Vasseur, but as you could probably tell, but from his point of view and the team point of view, would you ever swap the positions given the weekend signs I've had? He's been dominant from the get-go, right? No, so that would be really bad PR as well.
And I'm keen to make it a race review rather than a news show. However, I think the key difference with the old team orders there is that Leclerc isn't necessarily going to be their number one driver next season. I think it's going to be different next season. I think you are going to see a few more team orders.
And this leads me on to my quote at the start, but this is actually a good weekend for Lewis Hamilton because technically his car won the race this weekend. The team, I know, I'm proper reaching, but it was a great weekend for him. And Leclerc just didn't have much to answer to Sainz as well. Of course, the first race he had the brake issues, but Sainz has had the better over the two races he's participated against in Leclerc this season thus far. So I'm all here for this year for Sainz.
So talking about the Sainz race win and how he won the race today, when he was at the front, he made some real, like, commanding decisions. I want the gap. And I think part of the reason that he wants the gap is because he knows, he is used to that there will be an undercut from Leclerc. And on the second pit stop, he's really saying, pit me now. You know, don't wait for that delta to close. Because so Leclerc's on newer, faster tyres. The gap's about 27 seconds. And Sainz is smart. So he knows if the longer I stay out, the more that gap closes. I don't want the tyre life advantage. I want the track advantage. Don't make it close for me. And they pitted him after 25, when the gap was 25 seconds. Yeah, but early on, he just said, no, I want to build the gap. The tyres are fine. Let's go. And he must have known as well over the course of the weekend that he had that tyre wear and race pace advantage over Leclerc as well. So, and it wasn't good. Leclerc didn't seem to have an answer anywhere all weekend, looked lost in all the press pen interviews. So that's a real statement from Carlos Sainz. When it mattered, when Ferrari were at the front with a win, he was clear.
He's had these weekends as well, Carlos Sainz. It's not the first time he's done it. You know, he's won three races since Lewis Hamilton's won a race, just to compare him to other people, just pointing that out, because it's been a while since Lewis has won a race. And also, Leclerc goes missing some weekends. Yeah. And it's not a good trait. But also at the same time, and to defend Charles Leclerc and all this, I know Carlos Sainz wiped the floor with him this weekend, and with no disrespect to Charles, But Lewis Hamilton has had weekends where he's been missing. You know, there's been other top drivers who have had these kinds of weekends. So it doesn't mean that Leclerc's, you know, just because he's had a poor race doesn't mean that Carlos Sainz, now they've made a bad decision on this front. Yeah. There's a lot more race data over the last 3 years showing that Leclerc was still the best decision. But like we said, we can't disrespect Carlos's ability because this weekend, he was on top of it with strategy. And in hindsight as well, Spanners, if he had waited another lap, I'm pretty sure that was when the VSC came out. So he would have even had more of an advantage. I might be wrong with that. Maybe it's been a while. It was very hard to follow the race in person, but that's pretty much what I gauged from that.
I think you're right. Yeah. So Alonso benefited from the virtual safety car. And this is from interrogating Matt earlier. And Carlos Sainz managed to got in before it, but was still able to keep his lead. So after that virtual safety car and after the round of pit stops, Leclerc was within a second of him. And that's when I was most worried. But it just seemed then halfway through the stint, you could just see on the lap times, Leclerc suddenly like went out half a second and couldn't claw that back. And Carlos Sainz had to be saving at some point as well. So I think he was utterly in control of that. But the criticism with Leclerc, the common criticism, is that peaky performance. And so sometimes you can get a bit fooled by those drivers. And unfortunately, I think Perez comes under that banner as well. So Perez from the midfield Racing Point Force India, you know, grabbing a win, grabbing 9 podiums, and then going missing for a lot of those other weekends, it can kind of give you a little bit of a false stock of that driver. And unfortunately, I think it might be, you know, Leclerc in that bracket. But it's a long season. One thing I love doing is, you know, drawing conclusions from the most recent data point. So let's continue to do that as we go to McLaren. Okay. Really, really strong weekend for McLaren. And you know, something I really like about McLaren, Jono, is that they just, or it's more Lando Norris, they just tell us at the beginning of the weekend, oh, we're normally right turnips here. We're normally awful here. Or, oh, we like this track. We're going to do well. You know, there's no subterfuge with that. They called it in Bahrain. We're going to struggle in Bahrain. Yep, Australia suits us. We're going to do well. And they did.
And it's great for the betting man, which is good, or the betting woman.
Yeah, you can just listen to Lando.
Yeah, Lando. And that's one thing I really like about Lando is, and he said this a couple of years ago, where he was this very young jokester streaming video games, and he kind of said, hey, I want to be taken seriously this year. I think he went into 2021. And since then, it shows that he is a very underrated, smart driver, in a sense. He's super high IQ, I think, Lando Norris. I think he definitely knows his stuff. Not in at risk of turning this into a new show, McLaren were bought out by the Bahrain Sovereign Wealth Fund as of yesterday.
Yeah.
I can't remember the complete details to it. I think it was 100% ownership, but I think that's wrong.
Of
I
the might group, be wrong with
that. It was 100% ownership. Now, what does that mean for their future now? That's something we can talk about in a new show. But what it means today is that the Bahrain Sovereign Wealth Fund are coming off a good base. McLaren were arguably the third best car today, potentially almost, well, they were the third best car minus the Red Bull, and they've got a good foundation to work off. If their development goes well, it goes well into 2025, how much money is this Bahraini group going to push into 2026? So if you Lando Norris, that contract extension looks pretty good at the moment.
Yeah, it's obviously what Lando Norris is doing us is he's giving us that clue by him telling us, well, this is going to be one of the tracks that suits us the most. If we take him on his word on that, then you go, well, McLaren at their best on a track that suits them operationally, as they normally are doing, getting the maximum out of that race, are nearly up there with Ferrari, who were arguably better than Red Bull who were having a bad weekend. Christian.
And add to that, they just re-signed Zak Brown as the CEO of McLaren Technology Group until 2030, I think. And in his statement, he said something like the words of the vibe in the team is just so great. Everyone is getting on. Everyone's happy. The work of Andrea Stella is amazing. And you can just feel that vibe of a team in positive growth. And I totally reckon what Jonah just said. The not only just Lando, but the team pairing, the race driver pairing in McLaren is a very strong one. You know my love for Piastri is just underlined by that scene in Drive to Survive where he wouldn't
get into the McLaren technology building. The doors basically just closed. Just stood there everyone else would just, where do I go? He just stood there. I think that team is in on the rise. Right?
Does he remind you of a young Kevin Magnussen, perhaps?
Not at all. Kevin Magnussen would have broken the wall with a stone or something. Yeah, exactly. That's just the difference in style.
So slight sidebar here, because you guys keep talking about new stuff and like general team stuff, it's starting to make me worry that you didn't watch the race, and only because the last time I had a panelist on who kept, every time I asked about the race, they diverted off and talked about like broad news topics. They said to me afterwards, I didn't get to watch the race, but I didn't want to let you down. So you guys all watched the race, right? Yeah.
Of course. Okay, I was there. Yes.
Yeah,
I was
at the race. Yeah.
I fell asleep, but no, I didn't fall asleep. Can I actually, is it too early to talk about the team orders dilemma with the McLaren drivers, or can we go into that?
Go now.
So that is, was it unnecessary, is what I'm going to throw out to the panel.
Not at that specific time, no, because Piastri was brought in 5 laps earlier than Norris. So there's a bit of confusion, I think, I've seen online of people saying Piastri was slower than Norris. He actually wasn't. It was the fact that Leclerc, he was pitted the same time as Leclerc. Lando had track position initially, and then he had 5 lap younger, older tyres than Norris. And then he was told to extend to try and to go longer on his middle stint. And because of that, because obviously we were using the softest compound tyre this weekend as well, Piastri's tyres were just falling off. Leclerc's were also falling off, hence why he did the undercut. And that's why they let Lando go past. Mm. And it was the right decision at the time. The reason Piastri then, unfortunately, didn't catch up to Lando at the end and there was a large gap is because he wasn't able to navigate his way through the traffic as well as Lando. And he got caught in some areas that unfortunately broadened that gap. If you look at the lap times, he was on pace with Lando throughout that whole race. It was just a tyre offset in that middle stint. Lando had 5 lap younger tyres and it was the right decision at the time.
And it's not often we see teams switch drivers on the same strategy. Yes, there was a tyre offset that you mentioned, Scott, but on paper, it was the same strategy in a sense. So it's not like, for example, Lando was on softs and Oscar was on hards or one of those sort of situations. So that was one thing I found a little bit odd in the first place. Whether Lando would have made his way past regardless, I think, yeah, eventually, I think he would have made his way past. We saw Oscar make a couple of mistakes. He bottled it at the second to last corner at one stage, went off into the grass. But there's this mentality thing that drivers have is, and I've seen this historically over the last 10 years, and I think the only driver, I'll mention the only driver who's about to prove me wrong with this theory is, when somebody's told to move to the side, their performance completely drops off a cliff. It's like mentally they've kind of gone, well, stuff this. I'm not, I've been told to move aside, I'm out of the way. The only person who didn't do that was Felipe Massa at 2010. At the Hockenheim ring, very, very long throwback. The one where Alonso, that was where team orders. Anyway, that's something to Google for people afterwards if you'd like to Google it after the podcast. But it is a very super mentality thing.
Yeah.
Does Oscar make that mistake if he's not asked to move to the side? Is he more focused? Is he more engaged in the race? He's in a position where he goes, well, it doesn't matter what I do, I'm going to finish fourth here. So, there was that kind of factor to consider too.
If you're wondering why we're talking about, teams having to give things up, if you're wondering why, we're not going straight to the Logan Sargeant thing, it's just because it has been covered so heavily, I didn't want to put it up at the top of the show. So I don't want to blame fans who jumped to the conclusion that it was Piastri not being able to hold on to his tyres, because I think that's a fair initial conclusion as a fan, because that has been happening. But also, I'm just curious as to why, did he have to cover off Leclerc? Is that why he pitted 6 laps earlier?
Yes. So they responded to, they were fighting Leclerc. It was to split the strategy.
Yeah.
But take Norris long. They were still fighting Sainz as well at that time. Sainz wasn't too far up the road. And they obviously reacted to Ferrari and brought Piastri in.
Okay. My not defending Piastri point is that seems like you have used Piastri to cover off Leclerc, and your mentality is still, how can we get Norris as far as up as we can? Yeah. So if you're in that position in your team, that's because you haven't been able to establish yourself yet as on equal footing or better. So that is a little bit on Piastri. But on the day, you can talk about why. You can say, okay, it wasn't just that he was a sitting duck because Norris was so much faster. Sorry, Christian.
In regards to going offline, so letting your teammate pass, I think that if you're already in a cycle where your tires are not really working, you're just maybe not in the window, and you go offline to let your teammate pass, that is where you lose those 2-3 tenths and the tires are just gone. It's going to take you a lot of laps to get them back. I think that is one of the points where why people want to be a little bit hesitant with this. But also, and I did watch the race, Benners. So, but this is about McLaren as well as a group. If you watch a team like McLaren switching their drivers, where they take their local hero, putting him behind British hero a country where he, I mean, if you can do that and you have no team radios with no Yuki going on the inside and.
Yeah,
just watch out.
Imagine if that was like during the Ashes as well. It would have been like a riot.
Well, there were. I didn't hear boos from my section. I was sat at the grandstand over at turn 6-7, which, by the way, I'll get into later. Saw a mass amount of accidents over the weekend, which was awesome to see.
Accidents are fun as long as everyone's okay.
As long as everyone's okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for putting the disclaimer on that one at the end. But it was there were no boos from my section. I heard there were boos, but understandably, it's your home driver. How often have Australia had a home driver on the podium? 2014 with Ricciardo or whatever the year was, and he got disqualified. I think that was the only other time. So Australia wanted to see it, you know, and it was from McLaren. That's why I say unnecessary. Maybe I should have added context to that before, because like we'll get into Williams later. Was that necessary? Was that unnecessary? It was, but we'll get into that later.
Actually, sorry, I meant to counter this earlier. I think if there was a mistake, they should have decided earlier because Norris was losing behind Piastri. So if you kind of had it in your head that, okay, we've already sacrificed Piastri, we need Norris to go, maybe the only thing I was thinking was it could have actually been a few laps earlier to let him go and up the road to chase Leclerc. Scott?
Well, I actually want to get onto their strategy as a whole. I think McLaren dropped the ball. I think they possibly could have had a P2 and P3. I think they kept Lando and Piastri out there way too long, and they banked on that last stint on the hard tyre of Leclerc falling off, and he didn't. Leclerc came in lap 34 and they kept Piastri out there for an extra 5 laps, Lando for another 6 laps. And they expected to catch him, I think, with 5 laps remaining as kind of the first 2 stints you saw the tyres fall off. That gap never came about. So I think they dropped the ball there. If they brought them in earlier, we would have been in for a bit of a grandstand finish, I think, with those three.
I agree on that. But it's something I was looking at during the race too, that the drop off with the hard, personally, I didn't see it as dramatic as I thought it was going to be either. So for example, like earlier in the stint when Leclerc had 7 laps older hards than Sainz, the tire like delta, it wasn't like Sainz was screaming past like 1 second a lap. Like that's what I was expecting from that big of a tire difference. So I also think there was that to consider too, is that the hard actually kind of held up well throughout this race.
So you could say, underlining my point from earlier, that Ferrari won the race on strategy?
Ooh, over McLaren. Ooh. That's a big one. Hey, we don't have Matt here. We don't have Matt here. So, Christian, give us a random tyre fact.
All the tyres brought to every race during the season from Pirelli will eventually look up and see a Netflix microphone.
Every single tyre?
Every single tire. That is how many Netflix microphones there is.
I think that might be hyperbole, but okay. Okay, you told me you had some interesting tire facts. That's the first one. I took a risk, and right now I'm going to say, I'm not sure it's paid off, but we will go again. So random.
I have one more.
Well, we'll save it. We'll save it.
Okay,
for,
cool, yeah.
We'll save it for the next time. I can't quite remember the point I was going to make, but I have it now. So
I also have some quotes, like famous quotes from races, but that is only if we have nothing to talk about.
Love it. Carlos Sainz, I feel, could have been saving more than we saw. So I think he was actually a little bit more in hand. And when you're that car out in front, I mean, he hasn't had to do this, really. But when you're that car out in front, it doesn't pay to go 40 seconds ahead. So there's been a lot of races where Verstappen could have gone 40, 50 seconds ahead to start with. But what you're doing by doing that is you're giving away your advantage. So it might seem like it's great disappearing 40, 50 seconds ahead, using up your tyres the same as everyone else. But then when there's a safety car, you're out of options. You've basically neutralized that extra pace that you've had, which is why you don't tend to see gaps like that. Verstappen, in one of the most dominant cars in history, only tends to be 25 seconds down the road. Hamilton used to, in the hybrid era, he would only sit five or six. They'd only protect against the virtual safety car. And then Vettel would want a free pit stop, which is kind of what Verstappen's doing as well. So Carlos Sainz finds him in that position. So I think that's something to look for in races, is the lead car is probably the hardest one to tell how much pace they've got. So has Ferrari and Carlos Sainz unlocked something going forward? I don't think we've got all the information. All we know that is today, he was all over it. And oh, I know we've gone back to Ferrari, but would he have overtaken Verstappen anyway without that issue? That's a big question, Scott.
I think potentially. I think the Red Bull really struggled on this compound attire this weekend. They weren't as good in race trim as they were in quali. They were indicating all weekend, Perez, and obviously I trust as little what comes out of Helmut Marko's mouth as anything, but they stated that the Ferrari looked very good in their race simulations and that this is the softest compound of tyre. The first two races, we've had the hardest compound. So we've gone from one end of the scale to the other, where Red Bull were very dominant. And yeah, it could have been a difference in setup, or it could have just been that this new car, this new concept, isn't great on the softest compound of tyre that Pirelli have provided this season.
It was a step softer this week than the last Australian Grand Prix. And this is the point I was trying to make to Alex Brundle, was that Pirelli have a lot of power. Well, I know Alex tried to sort of play that down, but if the FIA, if Liberty Media go, right, we need this, right? This compound seems to be not so great for Red Bull, and it's letting Ferrari challenge, have a little word in Pirelli's ear and go, listen. You know, especially if they're negotiating for a contract, which I don't think they are, because I think Pirelli are leaving. But you could see it. There's a world where Liberty Media go, right, we'll move the mountains if you just go a step softer on everything.
We've been talking about this last few weeks in our own Missed Apex chat. I've kind of brought it up and gone, well, every year I've watched F1 throughout my lifetime, the team that wins and is dominating, there seems to be a mass kind of takedown of their dominance. But the problem with Red Bull and a lot of the insider knowledge we've been hearing that's been fed to us at Missed Apex, because we're exclusive like that sometimes, and it is that Red Bull aren't doing one very good particular thing. They're doing everything all round just good. And so it's hard to take away something. Now, if this tyre thing is something to take away from them, it might be an option to level the field a little bit, Christian.
From my understanding, the it's the softest option, right? There's the C5, which is the soft option here. And the soft option, even on qualifying trim, where your car is basically zero petrol in there, so it minimum weight, their rear tires heated up so much that they didn't get to get the front tires in the groove before the rears were gone.
Is that Red Bull?
Or vice versa. Yeah, that was in qualifying trim, right? Red Bull have had issues all 3 days during the lightweight runs, and every team more or less had a little bit of an issue with the C5. And I think where we are with this evolution of cars, the pressure from the downforce, how much it weighs, the speed we're going through, T9, T10, was maybe just too much for the C5 tire.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare.
PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, let's move down the grid, which means we get to play a game of Whose Fault Is It?
Whose Fault Is It?
As a motorsport fan and a Formula One fan, every now and then you have to brace yourself that and remind yourself that Formula One is dangerous. And we just see drivers getting out of such spectacular shunts now, more or less unhurt, that we can become complacent to the dangers of the sport, especially seeing Romain Grosjean walk away with what is hopefully, I think, superficial injuries from a crash that I assumed in the moment had killed him. Today, I think we saw something that could have been potentially horrifying, which was George Russell on his side with his head facing towards the oncoming traffic and then not being a red flag. And George Russell was visibly panicked, and rightly so, on the team radio, desperately calling for a red flag. Onboard footage from Lance Stroll shows that, you know, he didn't really stand a chance seeing him, saw him at the last minute under yellows. And I honestly think, even from iRacing or karting, whatever racing I've seen, racing drivers don't respond to a single yellow flag. It's seen as advisory or a chance to sneak up on your opponents. So what we saw today was just a really dangerous situation. But what I'd like to ask the panel is, whose fault was it? Who's got an opinion on whose fault that incident was? So initially, I have to say, I looked at that and I went, he's done it again. Russell, he's done it again, just like Singapore, chasing someone down and he's lost it. It looked like a choke, Jono, initially.
One thing we'll do after we discuss this incident is read the stewards' summary of this, which is an interesting experience reading that over 2 minutes, but we'll get into that a little later on. Yes, the data shows that Alonso was very different to his prior 7 laps, which I saw somebody send. Then again, I did see it on Twitter, so I don't know how they got that data and where you can get it from and whether or not it was photoshopped. But if it was real, it was definitely a huge difference. Here's the interesting part is that George certainly had he's lifted off and he's had some off-throttle oversteer from what I've seen. And so he is the one under control of the car that crashed the car. But was he instigated or was he broken out of rhythm in a way that was unnatural to what racing is? And that's what the stewards tried to determine. Now, if you're watching this live, it was only breaking, I think, as of an hour ago. So that's kind of breaking that Alonso's received a two-place penalty for this. And so the stewards, not two-place penalty, a drive-through penalty, which resulted in losing 2 places, which I think in the end, he's only lost a place to Stroll and Tsunoda. And I think Tsunoda finished, so Alonso ended up finishing in 8th. So he's only lost 2 championship points for the team, whereas Mercedes have lost a lot more at stake. So is the penalty fair? Is what Alonso did fair? That's up for discussion, I guess, right now.
Stuffy?
It's Alonso. It's Alonso. It is not always the car's behind fault. I know George came out and in the interviews afterwards and said, oh, well, I'm the one who's crashed initially. But I think that's because he's mates with Alonso. I think he's trying to take accountability for him crashing there. But come on, the telemetry does not lie. I think Alonso thinks we don't have access to telemetry. The man has previous. He did it in Abu Dhabi last year with Lewis Hamilton, got away with it. He's done it previously throughout his years.
Coulthard, Nürburgring.
Yeah. Got away with it. And this time around, he's just been caught out in a corner that the closing speeds in these cars are phenomenal. And I know, obviously, you can technically park it on the apex. She has no intention for you. You're the lead car. You can control the pace.
Yeah.
However, as the stewards have reported, they deem that to be unnecessarily dangerous. And George couldn't even get past Alonso for 10 laps prior to that anyway. So I don't know why he felt the need to do it. Supposedly, he had reported he had an issue with his throttle. And he definitely laid it on thick after the after he saw George crash in his rearview mirrors, bobbing up and down as if he had that throttle issue. So I don't know if there was anything in that regard. But yeah, the telemetry doesn't lie. And I think rightfully so, he's finally been punished for it, whereas in times past, he's got away with it.
There's a lot of things that drivers do that we don't necessarily notice in their driving style, in their how they maybe react to another driver's driving or just an attitude in driving. And if you go, I have my experience from go-karting mainly.
Yeah.
And if you have a driver behind you who's obviously faster than you, and you can, you just know that corner, maybe corner eight, just some fictional corner, he goes in fast and then maybe a little less fast out, whereas you go the opposite. Then of course you brake a little earlier there because you want to ruin his run into
the corner. Yeah, a little earlier, yeah.
But there is interfering slightly, and then there is obstructing. And I think Alonso's been obstructing other drivers for way too long. I think actually Verstappen does this as well. They are interfering in others' racing lines to make a better outcome for themselves. And I think that should be illegal from all points of view.
Yeah, well, Jono, you've got the statement there. I don't want to just sit and read it, but I think the key thing is that he had to then accelerate again to make the corner. You know, it's not like he broke a little early. It's 100 meters shy. He lifted early, 100 meters, and if you look at the onboard from Russell, like the closing speed is a lot, and it's the fact that he then had to basically accelerate again to go into the corner. I think that goes. This is a brake check. It's an engine braking check. But it's an out-and-out brake check.
To ruin his corner, so the straight afterwards, he's not gotten the maximum out of there, and that is the last lap. So,
but that's the thing, and I'm saying this as a, you know, I am a huge Alonso supporter my entire life, as I am Lewis Hamilton, so I know that sounds a bit weird, but because those two haven't really mixed most of their careers. But there's a common denominator in all this, and that's what Christian's sort of saying here, is that, like, if this was any other driver, is this sort of investigation treated differently? Maybe. I don't know. But because it's Fernando Alonso behaving this way and the way he's done, it's kind of looked at in a way in sense that Alonso's done this before. He's been guilty of this before. He's done it in practice sessions before, back in his Renault days. You know, I've seen this so many different times that Fernando Alonso's done this kind of thing. I'm not going to read the entire stewards report. I think it's something that if you can Google or find on Twitter, definitely find it, because it's, I think somebody left text-to-speech on or something, because it's like that somebody was trying to explain what their thought process. And I like the transparency from the FIA, but it was honestly like kind of interesting reading it. In the end, they found him guilty. Sergio Perez, Abu Dhabi 2021, for the exact same thing. Not guilty, but that's a conversation.
No, I think there's a difference. Right, here's what I want to talk about then. Like, Stuffy, I'll go to you, right? So Stuffy does some great iRacing streams, not so good in a go-kart, but on iRacing, you're brilliant. And you can't beat me in a kart. I've got to be a minimum standard. I'm like the Ocon of go-karts. You've got to go in there and beat me. But go and check out Stuffy's iRacing streams. We'll definitely have links in the show notes below. They're funny. They're the best iRacing streams on TikTok. No doubt here. You aren't obliged to take the same line into a corner every single time. There are things you can do. So something I always do on lap one is I want to make sure the guy behind doesn't shunt me. So what I will do, I'll tend to have a little lift early just to take the edge off, not like a brake check, but just enough that the driver behind sees that the gap's closing and goes, oh, hang on a minute. Well, I've got to think here. And then I can brake later into the concertina. So you can do things like that, but what makes this over the line?
But Alonso even says in this steward's report that he got it wrong. There's that as well. But yeah, now what makes this over the line is the fact of the nature of how early he's done it, 100 meters, and the fact of it he's then had to speed up again. I mean, when you watch, it all happens all so quickly when you see it the first time. You watch it back a couple of times and you can see how you see that initial pull up of him lifting off. He slightly touches the brake, but apparently it's not enough really to slow him down. And then he speeds up again, and then it lifts off again. So there's two elements of lifting before the corner. That one lift probably would have been fine, and he probably would have got away with it, and George Russell would have reacted to it. But it's the fact of it, he does it twice, that it's just too much. The closing speed is dramatic, and that's where George then obviously loses the car. It all happened so quickly. I think it's very harsh to blame George Russell, because ultimately, if he doesn't do this, then they're still racing to the end. It's terrible, because George could have potentially lost his life. Like, that's what we're talking about here.
In the live chat, Scott says, hello, patron, live chat, patreon.com/MissedApex. Come join our community. Come join the fun. Telemetry shows that he breaks twice. There's a lot of rubbish telemetry out on Twitter at the moment. So all I would say is just be careful. Like, Scott has pointed out some that was showing that there was a throttle issue, but they'd actually used virtual safety car laps to try and make that point. Any F1 Twitter account that's got, oh, I'm a data analyst, like, if you ignore them, you'll be correct to ignore them more often than you're wrong, Jonah.
Yeah, that's what I was saying earlier, is just be careful, because nobody lies on the internet, as we all know, sarcastically.
I do it all the time.
Yeah.
If it suits me, or someone pays me money.
So the dirty air by the stewards, that they've said in their report that, Alonso is not responsible at all for the dirty air that Russell may have endured, you know, through the corner. And that's true. Like, why is that? That's not in the rule book. There's nothing about dirty air, you know, in terms of driving standards. But that definitely affected Russell. Now, let's go back to just what Russell could have done differently. I think, now, when he's approaching the corner, think about yourself. Anyone here has ever been on iRacing, like you said, or gone karting, or even if you're road driving, this can work at a simple traffic light. If you start to follow the car in front, or they start to do something differently, it throws you off rhythm. Yeah. And so George has now been thrown off rhythm. And with the dirty air, it's enhanced his... Or the opposite of that, it's made it harder for him to keep the car on the road. There's less downforce. So unfortunately, you know, there is part George that's a mistake from him at this point, but it wasn't helped by the fact that Alonso...
He's been taken out by Alonso here. I think so. This is the only whose fault is it that we've done where they never actually made contact. But yeah, no, I think Alonso's actions have taken George Russell out. I feel complete sympathy for him. I don't think he could have done a lot differently. And I think he's done well to not have a bigger crash. Christian.
What if Russell has a feeling about Sainz signing for Mercedes next year and he refuses to participate if Sainz is winning?
And that's it. So, yeah. So there's engine mode 11. Our friend Dan Jury was pointing out on Twitter that every time Carlos Sainz has won, George Russell has crashed out. And obviously the two most recent ones, it was on the last lap as well. So my advice to Mercedes is, if Carlos Sainz is winning, just retire Russell. Just save the parts there. So the something that's annoyed me is the lack of an immediate red flag. So last year in Australia, there was the crash caused by Alonso, and then that was red flagged immediately. So cars didn't all get through sector one. And then lo and behold, Fernando Alonso, by complete coincidence, is sort of forgiven. And everybody has to come back and Alonso gets a do-over. And then this time, when there's a genuine risk of cars flying through blind corners, there was no red flag. So I don't know how stewarding works. So obviously can't make an ultimate judgment, but if you see a car that is on its side with the head pointing head on in a blind corner, how is that not an immediate red? Stop your vehicles. Sorry, Scott.
I totally agree that the whole incident warranted a red flag. I think the reason why they didn't, and I'm sure they'll possibly announce it, I don't know, later today or something, is that they were already on the last lap. So they... Not that it's a valid excuse in my part, because that car is spread out perpendicular to the track. And yeah, they should have completely red flagged. And then so be it. The leaders crossed the line for the last lap. End the race there. Don't restart it for a single last lap.
Oh, no, it's over. It's carnage.
It's over. That's why they threw the VSC, because they was across the last lap. If they still had maybe one full racing lap remaining, like it was... he'd only just crossed the line for lap 50, not the penultimate lap, then they might have thrown the red flag and gone, yeah, let's have one last lap of carnage. But it should have been a red flag, no doubt whatsoever.
If I could ask one favour from our new DTS fans who are part of our community and whom I love, please never, ever go away. If I could wish one thing, it would be please accept that some F1 races finish under safety cars, finish under red flags, and that's a completely fine, accepted thing that we've watched for decades and decades and decades. Christian?
If they had red flagged it, I think I know why, because if they had red flagged it, the result would have been the last time they all crossed the line, right?
Maybe. Yeah.
And in case this wasn't an Alonso mistake, that would have given Russell his points, even if it was Russell's own mistake. So you're kind of like, if you red flag it here, I don't know. It should have been red flagged.
Definitely. All of that is massively outweighed by me not wanting to see Lance Stroll harpoon George Russell's face.
Yeah. There was a lot of people out there saying, when I say people like out there on the internet and on Twitter, on social media, saying, oh, look, George is just doing that to get his points back. But, you know,
there
is an element and a benefit of doubt that he could have been
genuinely scared. And I think there's a lot made of, oh, man up, don't be scared. Like, you're supposed to be scared of scary things. You're supposed to be. It's the brave thing is that you do it anyway.
And he couldn't see what was on coming like to him from that side. You know, the brilliant part was I was at that grandstand, like I said,
and
it was absolutely shocking. Yes, we saw it live. And as we're watching the cars come through, it was an interesting experience to see. And it was awesome to see an incident that, with everybody okay, obviously, but such a dramatic incident that I think that incident will be remembered for quite some time, you know, and I think it is certainly a dramatic one.
Can I ask a quick question to Jono? Can you explain the smell when you're at a Formula One exit? Because this is very special. This is one of the things you only get if you go see a Formula One race in real. The smell and the sounds when you watch a crash like that.
Yeah. When Albon crashed, for example, on the Friday, which we'll get to
you were there
later
as well.
On.
Is anyone keeping track of Jono making all these promises? Are you tracking all the things where you said we'll get to that later on? Because I think we're not going to get to those things. You've made us liars.
We have to talk about Albon, even though it's been covered to death, as you said, but we'll touch on it just a little bit.
Go on then.
But when Albon crashed, for example, I think the Russell incident, you couldn't hear as much, Christian, because the grandstand I was at was a little bit down the road. But the Albon, certainly, I didn't think that was what a car accident sounded like. It kind of sounds like you hear the tires puncture more than the car hitting the wall. It's like the tire puncture is louder than anything else. But the smell of the fuel is something, you know, is a great experience. And Verstappen's brakes going off was something where I said that smelt like a very expensive mechanical issue right there. Like you could just tell through the smell. So if you've never been to a Formula One race, go down and head there. You'll have about 500 races next year, according to the calendar. And so you can't miss out.
I'm going to catch you midweek for 20 minutes, Jono, just to talk us through what it was like at the ground at the Australian Grand Prix, so we can sort of linger on it for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Only real big car crash I've seen in single seaters was Buemi and Degrassi in season two at Battersea, season one, I think, where and it's a sickening crunch, and like you don't get that on telly because you can kind of hear everything folding and compacting in on itself, and you go, how is anyone okay out of that? So where are we? That leads us to sort of Mercedes, I think, which has been a really negative weekend. And in the end, I think they had such a bad weekend that a double DNF is almost flattering. That there should be something worse than a DNF because everything went wrong. The politics there are crazy at Mercedes. They clearly don't know what to do with that car at the moment. And I've got an interesting theory, which I want to run past you guys, which is why does Mercedes look so much worse this season than last season? And I think it's essentially because Lewis Hamilton, he gave up last year, he'd given up. This year, I know he's checked out and I know he's got his Ferrari contract. But this year, I think he thought in testing that they had a better car. And I still think he thinks they've got a better car. But they've gone.
Sorry, Spanish. I was going to say he said that this weekend. He said exactly what you're saying right now is that the window of the car, or there was something. I can't remember the exact quote, so I don't want to misquote Lewis. But he said, in the sense that the car they had better expectations for what they're getting at the moment. And the fact that today they were arguably, you could make an argument they were the fifth best car at one stage, you know, or was it Alonso lucky with the VSC? That's something where you can look at the data and think, okay, which car was quicker? But they're certainly struggling. And I felt sorry for Lewis with a mechanical failure. And then when they had no points, I said, well, that was probably good. It got him out of the misery of driving that car for another 40 laps.
Yeah, chat saying DNF stopped them from finishing out the points. So it was almost a mercy, I think, for them. If last season you took Lewis Hamilton out of that seat and replaced him with a driver that finished behind George Russell every single race, Mercedes would have looked as bad as they're looking now. Because don't forget, George Russell finished P8 in the championship and was off on race pace on the vast majority of the races. This season, George Russell is taking the car at its baseline, doing his best with it, not doing any messing around, and getting the best out of it he can. And the best out of it he can is broadly the same as what he was doing last season. Lewis Hamilton has taken himself out of that by going on wild goose chases with setups, and I'm becoming increasingly convinced that that is Lewis Hamilton is leading that. So between practice sessions, he's going, let's do something, let's change something, let's find something. I'm not happy to just beat George. I'm not happy to do what we did last season. I'm looking for something, and in doing so, he's essentially removed himself completely from the Mercedes league table. And so when we're judging Mercedes now, we're judging Mercedes as if Hamilton wasn't there. And if you'd have done that last season, there's no way that that car finishes second in the championship. Yeah, two George Russells last year at Mercedes. Sorry, George Russell fans. They're what, fourth, fifth in the championship? So that's what we're seeing. And that's why Mercedes are looking so appalling.
I just think they've made a poor car. I just think they don't have any idea about these regulations. They've supposedly got a brand new car, brand new concept, everything's brand new, and it is still looks an absolute handful to drive. You look at Lewis's quali lap when he went out in Q2 compared to Verstappen's whole lap. It is so, so different.
Yeah, but like, Scott, that's after Hamilton's got hold of it and started messing around. My point is, you're right, it's a bad car, but it's a bad car in the broadly the same way that last year's car was a bad car.
Yeah, but it's a bad car from baseline. That's the thing. Like, we've had this discussion before that George is used to driving an underperforming car in Williams, whereas Lewis is coming down from driving a car that is beautiful to drive, and he's always driven with his heart on his sleeve and doesn't like a car in a certain way. So yeah, he's chasing performance, but Mercedes, which is quite ironic really, if they don't get their act together this year, which we don't expect them to, and especially next year, how ironic will it be that the most successful car in this set of regulations will be the dreaded W13, the no side pod car that got a race win, a sprint race win. But yeah, it's just a poor car. It's slow in the straights. It's like George Russell couldn't overtake Fernando Alonso for like 8 laps. I was watching him. He got in his DRS. He couldn't get past him. Couldn't get past the Aston Martin. And Lewis, even on soft tyres, could only make up one position at the start. Like, it was no quicker than anyone else around him. Mercedes has just dropped the ball massively.
One thing is to have a car that goes at a certain amount of time, and then you put on more downforce, and then it's a little bit slower. Then you take off the downforce a little bit faster. You get to know your car. You know what is happening when you do things, the things you do. But at Mercedes, it seems they have no idea what they're doing and why they're doing it. Obviously, it's wind-related, or you could say the car is so sensitive that even when the wind changes, it just knocks the balance totally out of the window. And no one can drive a car like that very fast, because as soon as you're on the limit and you can't control it, that's just going to ruin everything. It's a SHIT box.
Let me try and make this point one more time in a different way. All right. Hamilton's going for wins. In his head, he's going for wins. If you were able to rein him in completely, right, that it's not happening, Lewis. You've got the car we've got. This is the windows we think we're setting up in. You're going to be broadly the same setup as Russell, give or take a little bit of a wing flap adjustment or whatever. I'm not, obviously not an engineer. That is that car then, under those circumstances, could be challenging for P2, P3 in the championship. Whereas at the moment, with Lewis Hamilton doing what he's doing, they're going to end up maybe fifth But Scott's disagreeing, but I think you're wrong, Scott, because look at the level that Russell's performing at. If Hamilton just goes, actually, my primary aim is to beat George Russell, he will collect enough points to put Mercedes much higher up the table.
Look, you know I'm a Lewis Hamilton fan. I'm a big Lewis fan. But even if they rein him in, I still don't think that car is anywhere near quick enough to fight for podiums. I just don't think it is. I think it's just massively...
But it wasn't last season. It wasn't last season either. And they still ended up finishing P2 in the championship.
I think this is worse. I genuinely think this is the gap. They've dropped the ball again. They've lost lots of personnel through their dominant era with this new regulation set. They've gone for new challenges, for more money elsewhere to other teams who are now doing better. And Mercedes have just got it wrong. They're just chasing. And I just think, McLaren are better than them. I think they're only just above Aston Martin at the moment.
Me and Scott disagree. Let's put a pin in that one, Scott, because I want to see how that develops. And I think the key to whether who's right between you and me, and I do love a debate, you can't lose a good debate because either I get a better argument or I get to be smug and win. It will be the difference between relative performance between practice sessions. So we'll get a good data point if for whatever reason they stop faffing around endlessly on Hamilton's setup. We have got a few things to cover as we go down. Oh, we can't leave without the swap. I know it's been covered endlessly over the weekend, Jono, but what a body blow to Logan Sargeant.
It was, and I had to think about this. Like, look, if you're James Vowles, is this necessary in terms from a PR perspective to then brand your team as a team that goes, we are capable of doing this to you if you drive for us as the number two? But also, Albon finished 11th, and I've seen previous Australian Grands Prix and previous other races out there and events where you can have a team that doesn't meet the technical regulations and both the cars get disqualified and you score points. In this case, the Haas has finished 9th and 10th. Well done to Haas. That was very unexpected.
Yeah, great result, yeah.
But on the flip note, if you're Albon who finishes 11th and Logan Sargeant, who I'm just going to assume... You know,
would have
sorry,
finished
Logan,
lower.
If you're listening to this, he probably would have finished down the order, the rate that things go in the history. So now Albon finishes 9th. So you have to take that risk and try and get as high as you can. And regardless whether he scored points or not, it was a great decision to make. And he finished 11th, and you never know. Have they finished all the tech checks yet? I'll visit the racetrack if you want and double check in person.
I disagree. I think it was so unnecessarily mean. Albon, you binned it, your car's broke, sorry. It's race 3. There's no championship position on the line. At the most, they were going to be fighting for 2 points. I like it. I like the ruthless attitude and the hardest decision I've ever made in my life, and I accept that gap. But they also had a chance to not be unnecessarily mean.
On the flip side, though, Logan Sargeant has done nothing within the last year and within the first 2 races of this season to warrant saying, no, that's my car and I will go out there and get you points. So, like, he hasn't improved. I know it's only 2 races, but he hasn't improved in those 2 races from where he left last season. He only got 1 point last season because of other drivers getting disqualifications anyway at the circuit of the Americas. So there was a lot of questions about him being retained. So, yeah, when you've got your driver who scored you 90% of your points over the last 3 years at a circuit he's always gone tremendously well at, you've got to take that opportunity.
If you zoom out just a tiny bit from the weekend perspective and look at the team in general, I would say if I was Logan Sargeant, I would just look into the mirror and say, okay, that was the message and I got it. He's got no future in that team, and they are having him in the team for the balance of this year, and then they're going to find someone else for next year, unless he goes and beats Albon, which is not
it doesn't
do
seem because... like it's there. And we can do a deeper dive on Logan Sargeant's career, but there's no bigger sign, is there, that we don't rate you. So it was the biggest vote of no confidence you could possibly imagine. In a zero stakes weekend. I know James Vowles tried to up it and say, we've really got the car for points. There's a broader point here as well. Everyone talks about Logan Sargeant being a pay driver, and I believe it, and I can't find the paper trail, but it's heavily rumoured to be 30 million for the first season at least. And look, Harry Benjamin and Mark Priestley were happy to call him a pay driver on the BBC Checkered Flag podcast. So I'm happy to do so as well. I feel like I need evidence that he isn't a pay driver. Alex Albon also contributes to that team and also has a financial agreement with that team, as far as I can tell. Of 15 million is the rumoured figure. So it could be that that is in Albon's contract as well, that if there's one car, he has it. But I would need to dig further. I just threw that out there without thinking. But
why? See, this is the thing with contract secrecy. If there wasn't his contract, why do teams not say that? Just say it.
Yeah,
I think it looks better. This is we signed him to this contract, and that's why we're doing it. And now I would look at that and go, well, legally they have to do it. You know, yeah. I wouldn't go and think now, well, Williams have chosen to degrade one of their drivers. On that note, one thing I don't like F1 teams doing is they think on paper and they don't think of the human behavior element of things. They go, well, here's what's best on paper because Albon's quicker. But what about all the intangible sides to this kind of decision
morale,
that you're making?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and team atmosphere, team dynamics. Yeah, the reason they don't say it is because nobody wants to say I'm at a team because we bring funding. So I would imagine that a lot of those contracts, you can't talk about it. Like, you literally can't talk about it. So that's why all the pay drivers, all the buy-in drivers still collect a salary. So all the drivers technically get paid, even if they bring, you know, a bucket full of money from dad's company. Christian, random fact, random quote.
Okay, do we want a quote from a driver or from a commentator?
I want both.
Okay, this is David Coulthard. No, Sergio Perez in the F1 podcast interviewed by Tom Clarkson. Quote, you have to remember we are the pineapple of the sport.
What?
He should have said pinnacle, but he said pineapple. I just found that really funny.
Love it.
And let's get this one from David Coulthard, Abu Dhabi, 2023, lap 18. Both teams have problem with their nuts. Small things like that I just pick up from racing streams, and I write them down and I archive them, and then I bring them to you.
I love it. Thank you so much. But that has led me to the bottom end of the grid, and I'm being wary of the time. And that everybody needs to get to bed. The battle of the back was sad for different reasons. It was tragic for Stake Kicksauber because that wheel nut issue just means they can't go racing. And I would even go as far as to say, why turn up? If that's going to happen, like, don't turn up until that's solved. Don't do anything else until that's solved. So they should now be going back, running constant pit stop practices until that wheel nut issue is resolved. And if it's not, what's the point in coming out knowing that you're going to have 40-second pit stops? And then the other sad thing is that Alpine, despite those problems, Alpine was there battling with Sauber. Is there any positives from either of those teams from the panel? Rush at once.
They made it to the end of the race. Alpine didn't have a DNF for once.
Yeah. Yeah, so Alpine now, they're deeply rooted to the bottom of the table. It's as desperate as you can get, and only really saved by the DNFs, making it not look as
I think
good.
Actually, Ocon had a visor in his rear brake, wasn't that?
Oh,
Ocon?
Okay.
Oh, that's the reason he went slow, was it?
Right.
I thought you said visor for a second. I thought that the car hit his rear brake, but I meant to mean visor, yes. Do you get what I'm talking about there?
Yeah.
Visa, cash up. Yeah, I think it was a MasterCard, actually.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. My bad, yes.
I'd go as far as to say that Alpine and Stake don't merit much more conversation. So I'll just end this segment for the awards with Visa Cash App then. Jono, it isn't looking good for Ricciardo. He is getting actually... I said, broadly speaking, although Tsunoda wasn't delivering last season, was the faster driver, now it's just looking like a bit of a kick-in.
Wait, sorry. Did you say good for Ricciardo, or did my stream cut
no,
out?
No, I did not.
There?
I said the opposite. Okay. I said it's not looking good for Ricciardo.
I was just making sure for a second there. That's why I look so shocked for the people watching on YouTube. But now I'm less shocked. Yeah, it doesn't look good for Daniel Ricciardo. And I was talking to – we were talking during the race about this, about, well, you know, Perez's performance was a little bit shocking. Before I heard about these alleged mechanical
– Alleged. Look at you. You can't just – gremlins. Can't give us anything. Can't give me anything.
Well, okay, if you're going to take Perez out, Ricciardo was in prime position to take that seat. Red Bull doesn't look like they want Tsunoda, from what I've seen.
Mm.
What do you do now? What's the situation there? They're in a bit of an awkward situation. I don't know what to do if you're Visa Cash App RB.
if I can't give you Ricciardo because his form seems to be going, and you know he's 34 now. If I can't give you that, would you welcome him in, or is that like us with Scottish people? It's conditional on how well they do.
Well, first off, let me just. Now, I know Verstappen signed to the team, as far as I know, but let's just make sure he is racing next year, because if he isn't racing for Red Bull, we don't need to talk about this topic anymore. And I know, as far as I'm aware, I'm pretty sure contracts in F1, regardless whether you sign someone for 15, 20 years or 1 year, can be broken. So I think now that I've come to think about it, let's save this number two talk for mid-year, just in case Max Verstappen ends up at another top team or the World Endurance Championship, which is what he's been aspiring to do.
I was actually thinking about which one of those two ends up in the Red Bull team, because they could be scrambling around for drivers. But more when it comes to the race, one thing I was really impressed with was Yuki Tsunoda. I know I was upset at him for using his car as a weapon against Ricciardo, or having that what can only be described as a tantrum with his car. But in the last Grand Prix and this Grand Prix, some of his defensive moves have been outstanding. Like, he is ruthless. He will shut the door. He is every bit as ruthless as Max Verstappen wheel to wheel stuffy. And like, if you must do it even in like iRacing lobbies. There's certain drivers where you go, oh yeah, no, he's coming across. And like Tsunoda, is he blocking me? He will be.
Yeah, I've been. Sorry, Christian.
Sorry, Stuffy. I just wanted to say Tsunoda has a Honda association, I think.
Yeah.
And there's going to be Ford engines in the Red Bull. So, yeah, that is probably why.
Yeah, I've always been a big critic of Yuki. And I suppose I've got one more jibe. It's about time, Yuki. It's your fourth year in F1. Like, it's about time you show us what you can actually do. We've seen flashes of it. He's always, unfortunately, kind of been his own worst enemy. He is, especially after that first race, I imagine he got a very large telling off behind closed doors, rightfully so. He's definitely doing what he needs to do. Whether he's gets an opportunity at Red Bull next season, I don't see that happening. But he is definitely making other teams aware of he should be given possibly an opportunity in another team, wherever that may be. Even though it's not announced, I feel like Yuki's in a Carlos Sainz situation. I think he potentially knows he's not going to be in that Red Bull team as a whole anymore. And he is driving his socks off to advertise himself to another team, whoever that may be. But yeah, no, he's doing the job so far, and he's making Ricciardo look like a chump.
We were talking about Sainz not getting the respect. I truly believe Yuki Tsunoda just does not get the respect for his talent. I think he's belittled. I feel like he's infantilized constantly for his size, and that affects his reputation. So I'm really gunning, no offense, Ricciardo fan, I'm just really gunning for Tsunoda to just dunk on Ricciardo all season. And I know it will be bad for Ricciardo, but I think Red Bull are ruthless. It's realistic they could replace Ricciardo mid-season if it goes on like this.
Well, that just caught me by surprise. I didn't expect that. But yes, if they say, well, you have no future with us, let's try Liam Lawson for half a year again and see how he goes. Yes, that could happen. One thing that you also need to consider is the reasoning behind why Red Bull brought in Sergio Perez in the first place was because they needed the perfect wingman to bring back that turn back from the Valtteri Bottas days to help Max Verstappen win a title. And in a sense, he did help Max Verstappen win one of the titles in 2021. So are you looking for a ruthless young Yuki Tsunoda to come in, regardless of his Honda and Ford and all that kind of thing, like all the off-track kind of situation there? Or are you looking for somebody like Daniel Ricciardo, who's a veteran and gone, look, I've achieved what I've achieved. There's a chance I could win a championship, but I'm also happy to play number two. So that's something that Red Bull, if you're going to consider, who are we going to partner alongside Max Verstappen? That could be a turnoff with Yuki Tsunoda. He is a very ruthless person and driver. He wants to win.
I think the thing is about Red Bull is that they have an abundance of junior drivers to pick from. And one of their junior drivers just won the feature F2 race, which is Isaac Hadjar. He's done time in their car as well as the rookie. So, yeah, you have to perform. We know they're ruthless. and they probably will be. But what we are definitely in for this year is an exciting silly season, because there are 12 drivers out of contract at the end of this year. And of course, Lewis has started the merry-go-round by freeing up that Mercedes seat. So definitely stay tuned. I don't think there'll be a lot of drivers in the same seat by the end of this year.
Champagne celebrating a slightly different person being miles up the road in the Grand Prix. And I think it's unfortunate that the gaps are a little bit strung out in Formula One. So yeah, when that dominant car retires and everyone thinks, oh, it's game on, it was just a different car with a clear lead up front. So yeah, I think perhaps it's a blip in the road. But before this race, I have to admit, I was messaging Meg Schuster and just going, come on, F1, give me something. Just give me something. You know, I'm a huge defender of dominant periods. And I have been, like, last season with Verstappen's dominance, a huge defender of it, saying it's part of F1. You've got to live with it. And this season, I've stopped telling people they have to live with it. And I have to admit, it has been grinding. So just a different national anthem. I've forgotten that other national anthems existed. I thought the Dutch anthem was just how F1 races ended. So let's go into our awards. And I'll look at my panel and I'll see who most looks like they've forgotten to think of who to give their awards to. So we'll start with negative and we'll go positive. So I'm going to start with the pineapple of this panel, Christian Pedersen. Christian, I'm going to... Oh, that reminds me. I'm going to do a mashup of all the Meet the Panel segments that we did. Yours was very nice. We got to learn a lot about you. So you don't do social media, so we can't follow you. We have to stalk you at home. Bring a jacket. Denmark is cold and the snow is mushy. But you can do that. Who missed the apex? Oh, and I haven't played the bumper for it. Sorry.
Oh, no. You missed the apex.
Who missed the apex for you, Christian?
Can I use a quote in Mr.
Yeah,
apex?
You can. Yeah. Okay.
This, and you can guess who said this. And it's in the Miss the Apex category, right? Having three technical directors makes the organization much more horizontal, less vertical, more activity, more agility. We have something coming for sure, but we also need to change our way of developing the car and maybe racing the car as well.
Alpine. That was the Alpine.
Yeah, that's Bruno Famin.
Have released a statement saying, oh, we always knew actually that this car was going to be bad because we're developing for the future.
That DTS episode about Alpine from this last season, it's going to age very well.
It's always a good sign with any organization. Do you know what we need? A whole nother tier of management. Yeah, let's insert much more management layers in. That's usually so that when that happens, that's normally a sign that the person above that management tier wants more authority and power, and to make it look, I've got a team of technical directors underneath me. I must be much more important than a technical
working
director.
Working horizontal.
Yeah, all working horizontal.
For the fun of it.
Yeah, I'll be horizontal before long. The older eyelids are struggling. Okay, let's go to Stuffy. I already said Stuffy. People need to go and watch your iRacing TikToks, and you're going to help me experiment with some TikTok lives. I've worked out how to use the TikToks now, so watch out TikTok, here I come. What missed the apex for you?
You're getting down with the kids, aren't you, Spanners?
Yeah.
Oh, we're going with missed the apex. Yeah, we're starting positive.
No. We end positive. It's the new thing I'm doing.
Positive. Yeah. I'm going to say missed the apex for me. Of course, there are some obvious ones, but one for me was Pierre Gasly. He twice got caught this weekend.
Yeah.
Crossing the pit exit line once in qualifying, and he got a 5-second time penalty for it in the race as well. Just seems like one of the most basic things to do. I mean, of course, he hasn't got a lot to focus on at the moment, being at the very back of the grid in that Alpine. But yeah, I found that a bit odd, and that's definitely one that I think.
In his defence, there was a couple, wasn't there, that did that? Didn't Piastri do that as well?
But not only that, Spanners, it was in the Junior Series too, and in supercars and all the support categories. It's a very difficult pit exit blend line at this racetrack. It seemed very skinny this year, and I want to compare it to other years to see if it was any different.
There's lots of different road markings as well. There was a dashed line on there as well. Speaking of junior characters, go on.
Sorry, then I revert the right to change this award.
Go for it, yep.
To Gasly, but to the FIA for marking out the pit lane
poorly. mind you, I've got a little bonus one if we're going to do the Junior Series, Miss the Apex. There was a driver, I think, in the F3 that felt like he got cut off and then went around the outside and just foot like Baku with Vettel and Hamilton, except at much higher speed, and just put the driver in the wall. And that's not even the worst bit about it. The worst bit about it was he got a 3-place grid penalty, which 100% means if you're a bit angry at someone, you can get away at least once with just driving them into the wall. And somehow it found like, go and look it up, because it was deemed to be unintentional. And I don't buy that at all. Jono, you are a proper sports reporter man. Stand in front of the camera and say, hello, everyone. Today's news. It's kangaroo boxing and Derek Kangaroo's doing super good. And he's going to knock out the other kangaroo called Bruce. So enough of me being racist to Australians. Go and follow Johnny. Johnny S8ESS8.
JONNYESS8. Mm-hmm. Because I can't come up with a better handle.
No.
And after kangaroo boxing, you can catch snake wrestling. That's nice. Straight after.
I love it.
And then, snakes versus spiders. And then afterwards, it's wombats versus some other Australian
That's
spider.
All koalas. That's all they do in Australia. Who missed the apex for you?
Well, the person. Maybe I'm being overly sarcastic here, but the person who left speech to text on, who was writing that FIA report of about the Alonso Russell incident, because someone, obviously the stenographer there had speech to text on, like, I don't know who wrote that, but it was like the person who was deciding going, oh, maybe it's this, maybe it's that, maybe it's it. Thanks for letting us know your thoughts. You know, that was a great read for 2-3 minutes. Again, it's very overly sarcastic. I appreciate the transparency, but could it have not been written a little less like a forum post from the 2000s? Because it certainly looked that way.
Aussie Supercars, that's the one I think where they have the steward comes in front of the camera and gives the reason for their decision. I think it might be Aussie Supercars, but...
No, is it?
Oh, I don't know. I saw they some racing series.
They certainly say it over the radio, yeah. But yeah. I think it's thinking about basketball here, maybe. I think you've been watching too much of that sport.
So I definitely saw it. It was an Aussie, and he was there, and he was giving the full reason why. And whether, you know, right or wrong, like, you accept the referee's decision, even if you don't agree with it, but at least it's out there. So I don't mind the word salad. My Miss the Apex award goes to this Fernando Alonso tweet that Stuffy just shared with me. Double points for the team and a better race pace. Anyway, a bit surprised by the penalty at the end regarding how we should approach the corners or how we should drive the race. At no point do we want to do anything wrong at these speeds. I believe that without gravel on the corner, on any other corner in the world, we would never even have been investigated. My goodness, we never drive at 100% every race lap and every corner. Yeah, but you don't slow down and do engine braking 100 metres before to the extent that... Huh? Yeah, 100 metres before, twice, to the extent that you then have to accelerate and then brake again for the corner. Absolutely not buying that. He knew what he was doing. He set up that, I was having engine accelerator problems. I don't like any of this. I don't like any of this. I'm irked by it. And on another day, there was a death resulting from that. So, sorry, that's a bit heavy. But that is my Miss Apex award. I'm not pleased. That irks me. Let's be positive. I didn't get to plug things. Follow me at Spanners Ready. Without Matt here, I'm definitely the best one. If you're going to follow those mugs, you've got to follow me at Spanners Ready. All my links are in the show notes below. We have merch, the Wrong But First hoodies and t-shirts are going down really, really well. So go and check that out. And also, if you want to support us on Patreon, patreon.com/missedapex, I will be even slightly more your friend, because that is the reason that we get to do this. That is the reason why we had that great midweek content, because we can throw much more time and effort into it. If you would like to leave us an iTunes review, that is super, super handy as well. If we, like, collectively go iTunes review today, like now, this week, go, that shoots us up the charts and that lets everybody know that Missed Apex has a community. So, thing of the weekend to end on then. Christian, who wins your thing of the weekend award?
I could say the Sainz win. Oh, I could say the double points
this
for
is
Haas.
The Matt uses this tactic.
But Haas is always good at Australia. They are always doing fast times there. So I'm going to say Magnussen on Albon, T9 to T11.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lap 43 to 46. That was probably some of the most exciting racing in this
great race for the winning perspective, maybe a little bit dull race from a racing perspective. But that was just Magnussen being Magnussen, and I miss it.
Yeah. For an Australian Grand Prix, for this track layout, that was an interesting race because sometimes, you know, it's a great little street circuit, but sometimes, come on, Jono, sometimes like nothing happens at the Australian Grand Prix.
There's been better races. You would argue there's definitely been better races. Like 2012 was immaculate here. Like that straight away pops to mind of being a super entertaining race.
12 years ago, cool.
Yeah, but it was okay. It was okay this year. Yeah, 12 years ago, exactly.
Go on then,
Jono. I have a long memory.
What's the thing of the weekend for you then?
For me, it would be, I think, being there was awesome for sure. I definitely enjoyed it, but I don't want to make it about myself. What I'm going to do is half-half, being at turn six and the person who redesigned that corner where Russell crashed and where Albon crashed that corner and the amount of incidents and off-tracks I saw in the junior series and the sports series too, it was entertaining to watch because, you know, me, I've watched racing my entire life and I go, well, I'm not interested in cars going off the road and that's not, you know, I don't care. I want to see great wheel-to-wheel racing. And
no, yes, I want to see that.
But everyone likes to see gravel being flung up into the air and Albon's tires puncturing and you hear, you know, you smell, sniff Verstappen's brake. You know, that was just, it was a great experience. And I think turn six, I initially, when I got the tickets last year, I said, oh, come on, I have to sit here. Like, I'm going to miss the track run. Then they banned the track run and I said, oh, I'm not going to miss out on anything. Then it turned out to be one of the action spots of the weekend. So turn six, you get my thing of the weekend.
Funny, when you say like, oh, I smelled this thing, that seemed fine. But when you changed it to sniffed, suddenly it gets, it feels weird. Why is sniffed so much weirder than...
Sniff is illegal.
Sniff feels more deliberate. Stuffy, what was your thing of the weekend?
My thing of the weekend is to Pirelli for actually being bold enough to go one step on their compounds. Yeah. We've been highly critical in the Missed Apex chat of Pirelli. Of course, Matt always comes to their defense. But I thought, I always get it. They're very conservative because they have a brand to protect, etc. But sometimes they're too conservative, in my opinion. And it was nice to see a two-stop at Australia. I can't remember the last time we had a two-stop without an enforced safety car. Yeah, while it wasn't, unfortunately, the on-track racing that we wanted, as Christian said, we at least had some intrigue with the varying strategies. A safety car probably would have spiced it up even more because the soft tyres just didn't last five laps, which would have been quite intriguing for someone to see attempt. But yeah, no, Pirelli, more of it.
Cool. I can do the Christian tactic. Well, I could give it to Such, so I get three, but I was semi-tempted to give it to George Russell, because actually that was a bit of a monster stint on the hards, and nobody else had the guts to go for that option, which was available. So I think that was pretty decent of him. And I think I got put off by his crash, but now I've completely changed my mind that he wasn't responsible for that at all. And I think I am going to settle on Lando Norris, though. So given Stuffy saying that actually it was a suboptimal strategy, probably spent a couple of laps too many behind his teammate and they could have moved him. I think he's driving out of his skin at the moment. So I'm going to give it to Lando Norris. Okay, as ever, check out our show notes, beautifully prepared by Matt Two Rumpets, and that will give you the links to all the stuff we've talked about today. If you're angry that we said we were going to get to something and we never did, that's Jono's fault. That's not me. I never promised anything. We're going to catch up and do a little bit of a travelogue and some segments and a little bit of a mailbag maybe midweek. But wherever we see you next, work hard, be kind, and have fun. This was Missed Apex Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.